Hi, I'm Mark. Thanks for joining me today on Words of Truth, a podcast designed to help you interpret the Bible accurately and to deal with relevant issues that affect our lives today, looking at them from the perspective of the Bible. There's been a lot of discussion around some of the stories of the Old Testament, specifically about some people accusing God of genocide when he commands Israel to do away with the Canaanites and to take over their land. We read about that in places like Deuteronomy chapter 7 and Joshua chapters 6 to 12. But you know, the real question is, do these battles qualify as genocide? This issue is one that causes a lot of people to shun the Old Testament and even the New Testament because of its, well, guilt by association. Well, this is a complicated issue, and I'm not sure that I can completely cover it all in this short podcast, and I'm probably not going to be able to satisfy everyone's questions, but let me at least give you a handful of important things to consider to help you to sort through these issues. First of all, we need to realize that Israel's conquest of Canaan is a very limited event in history, and that not all of these wars were even sanctioned by God. In fact, some of them were even condemned because they were inspired by nothing more than pride and greed by ungodly kings. So not all of the battles in the Old Testament were even ordained by God. The fact is that the conquest of Canaan took place in a single generation as Joshua took command after Moses died. It was a limited period of time and a limited location in scope. And that means that the word genocide isn't even an appropriate word nor an accurate word to use for these battles. You see, this wasn't an Israel versus Canaan conflict based on ethnic identity. In fact, there were many Canaanites who recognized God as Lord of all the nations, and they even joined the covenant people of Israel. We see Rahab of Joshua chapter 2 and the Gibeonites of Joshua chapter 9 as examples of that. And in fact, if you read carefully, you come to realize that many of the battles start when the Canaanites attack Israel, and the Israelites are forced into defending themselves, and I think we've seen that history repeated over and over again in history. But if you read Joshua chapters 9 to 11, you'll see an example of this as various Canaanite kings formed coalitions to attack Israel. And so these were battles of survival against armies, and not against helpless people. And by the way, if you follow the news at all, the same thing is happening today as nations are joining arms to eventually attack Israel in the end times. And there's these continual little scuttles that happen time and time again. Well, anyway. But then some people will say, but you know, the Bible says they left no survivor, or the Israelites utterly destroyed them. But if you do a close reading and you compare the narrative with other ancient Near Eastern battles, we see that Joshua is actually using what we call intentional hyperbole. For example, there were cities Israel conquered that we're told no Canaanite survived. Look at Joshua chapter 10 as an example. But then, now follow me, just a few chapters later, when other Israelites go to those same cities, well, there are still Canaanites living there. And so the Israelites didn't do a full sweep of all the Canaanites, but the cities they did do war with, well, they were primarily small military outpost towns surrounded by walls, and the people who lived there were mostly military personnel. But we also need to be aware of the history between God and the Canaanites. You see, all the way back to when Abraham entered the land, we're told that the Canaanites, also known as the Amorites, were very morally corrupt and unjust, and that God was being patient with them. Genesis 15, verse 16, 7 says, the fourth generation of your descendants will come back here. That's the promised land. For the sin of the Amorites, those are the Canaanite people, has not yet reached its full measure. And so texts like Leviticus chapter 18 and 20, they give us a glimpse into Canaanite culture with its practices of child sacrifice and bodily mutilation, its violence and abuse. And God used Israel as his instrument for divine justice. These weren't battles just to plunder, but was an act of divine punishment on an extremely corrupt society. Furthermore, we need to understand that the battles of the Old Testament were not battles between Israel and the Canaanites. There's a really interesting story in Joshua chapter 5, where Joshua encounters the angel of the Lord, and Joshua asks him, are you for us or for our adversaries? In other words, Joshua wanted to know if he was pro-Israel or pro-Canaanite. But now listen, the angel gives a really interesting response. He said, no, but I am the commander of the army of the Lord. Now that's interesting. You see, the real question was not on whose side God was, but that he stands against evil and that he's going to bring judgment on evil, even if that meant the Israelites. Furthermore, the real question is whether Israel is on God's side. And that's a theme that runs throughout all of the battle stories. Usually, it's God leading the charge and Israel does the cleanup, Jericho being a great example of that. Israel didn't stand a chance against the professional, seasoned soldiers of Jericho, which was the case with almost all the battles they fought. They were always outnumbered and outgunned, but a divine hand was clearly at work in each of these battles. But also, I want you to remember that the Canaanites had decades of warnings before God brought judgment. Pharaoh was but one example they knew about, and they also had the examples of people turning to God and being spared from his judgment, like the example of Rahab. Well, as you can see, this is a complex moral issue, and I'm sure I haven't cleared up all of the questions, and there's so much more that could be said. But from an Old Testament perspective, we're dealing with a question about the justice of God. And we have to join with Abraham, who stood before Sodom and Gomorrah and interceded for him, asking, won't the judge of all the earth do what is right? I hope you'll take some time to dig into this topic for yourself. But in the very least, I hope I've given you some food for thought. Thanks for listening today. I'll see you next time.